Hi, my name's Sean Taylor. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the Objective Geek of YouTube and Twitter and wide-eyed fame. And welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters. Thanks for being here with us. Today we're going to talk about, we're going to revisit one of, you know, I'll say one of our most divisive episodes probably in score, but not because I hate it, just because you love it. So we're going to revisit Beginnings, parts 1 and 2. We're going to revisit that. But before we do that, Chris, how are you? How you been? What have you been up to?
I am doing super fine. Up to no good. No, I'm kidding. Up to
that's very hard to believe.
Up to no good. I'm going around.
You can't even think of something up to no good that you would do. Chris is over here. I was like, what do miscreants do in their free time?
I used to go to Walmart and roll back the prices.
That's like the Robin Hood of being a nuisance, like a money back to the people. Yeah. And you're shopping at Walmart, so you're probably not going to hurt your feelings, you know? That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Other than no good, anything else? Anything of note?
Not really, honestly. Oh, I rearranged, completed. I think I said that last week, but now it feels like I'm more so completed.
It's fuller. Actually. There's more stuff down there, so it feels more done.
Yeah, and then I got the other section. I had have all these action figures of. Well, I have almost 1,000 action figures, but I have specifically these action figures of the Batman movies, and I had them over at a certain area. And then I moved them to where I had the Avatar stuff at. And that took a while to do. Took probably close to 12 hours to move everything around. But it looks good.
When people visit, and I'll show them my game room, and they're like, man, you have a whole game room? And I always think about, Chris got a whole basement. He's got a Chris basement. I got a room that was, I don't even know what else he could use this room for. There's HVAC hanging a foot down in the middle of the room. Can't even fit a tall person in here. Chris,
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how I got lucky. Also, I started collecting kind of on a whim. And it just turned into this. I remember my parents visited recently. And they were like, you wrapped the whole room. And now it's just a continuous circle of...
It's a rectangle of stuff. It's a story. If you turn in a circle and you just tell us a story from beginning to end.
I should do a tour sometime.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Tour in a circle, pull out your favorite ones, and then there's got to be a couple in there that you're like, why did I buy this thing? And it's still both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That'd be solid. We've come a long way from the guys who didn't like spending more than a buck on a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Man, I think about I was looking at one of my first action figures that I bought, one of the first five, and it costs $40, and it's this big kind of big action figure. And I remember thinking I don't want to spend this much money on this, and now I would just not necessarily because I have more money, which I do have more money. Than 10 years ago, but more so because it's just part of my hobby, and I'm like, yeah, I'll get that. I don't question myself when buying certain things.
You understand the constraints of your budget and when you can ignore them when you feel like, and that's great. Yeah. That's great.
I do think my rate of collecting is about to go down, though. Because I am kind of running out of room. I can always... kind of find more room. I feel like I always have that problem, I don't have enough room, and then I find a solution. But I do think my collecting is going to start going down here in the next year or so, probably to just a few things here and there.
I take a little joy in curating. I take a little joy in occasionally finding stuff that's for some reason that doesn't hit right anymore, and then get rid of that thing or that small. It's teeny tiny chunks, but slow maintenance. I just was thinking the other day about, because I was talking to somebody about Yu-Gi-Oh, like normal people do. And I just remembered when I bought the Beals cards, that was like the crux of my deck. And I felt like I needed two of them, but they were $10 a piece. And I had to weigh that decision very heavily for quite some time before I pulled the trigger on those cards. But even listen, to this day, I 100%ed the Legacy of the Duelist game, like basically at the same deck. So Beals, best $20. And then eventually I got a third one when I saw how much, like how good they were or how useful. Eventually I got a third one. So best $30 I ever spent on Yu-Gi-Oh cards specifically. Chris, we have been watching, I started watching all the Superman movies so that you and John and I could have an episode where we rank all the Superman movies, because that sounds like fun. And I'm coming to realize some things about the Superman movies, and I don't want to say too much because I'll save it for the episode. But listen, if you haven't watched 1978 Superman the movie and then the three subsequent movies, what can I say that doesn't give my feelings away?
No, save it.
They are not what you maybe expected if you haven't seen them, or remember if you have seen them. Unless you're like John and you just like legitimately.
John legitimately loves those movies. I didn't know he loved them as much as I. Well, he legitimately loves 1 and 2. I know.
Yeah. And he said outright that he loves 4, but in the nostalgic way specifically. Yeah. But like, if you don't ardently like watch them, you know, if you don't watch them like once a year or whatever, if you're not that person, if you're like, oh, it's been a decade since I've seen them, I think when you watch them again, you're gonna think that's not what I remembered, for better or for worse. And if you've never seen them, it's gonna be the expected thing. For sure, it's going to be the not what I expected. But anyway, looking forward to that. I imagine that'll be a long conversation. We're going to have to do that one on a Friday night, I think. Solo episode Friday night. It's going to be a lot of discussion. But it's been fun. I've had a lot of fun going back through those. I just want to say more, but I can't yet. Mm-hmm. Chris, let's revisit Beginnings in parts 1 and 2. Just as we have a couple other episodes. But I think the difference is a couple other episodes we've done. We did one that we both hated, and then we did one that I hated. And as I mentioned previously, I don't think, and I'm going to try to pull up my ratings, I don't think I hated Beginnings. I had pretty ho-hum, but it's like a top episode for you. Like, you've got it at the peak. So not that you have to persuade me necessarily or anything like that, but I think like I'm looking for your pitch here, your elevator speech as we walk back through these episodes.
Yeah, I can elevator pitch. Well, I won't say elevator pitch because that's like a 2 minute pitch.
Oh yeah, you're right. It's really long, like a tall one. It's slow. It's kind of clunky. It's messed up in there.
I'll start off with because I wrote down a bunch of stuff. I'll start off with this. I love mythology. I've always loved mythology. It's interesting. In high school, I took the same mythology class twice, not because I didn't pass, but because the second time they retitled it slightly, and I just took it again. And when I could have just took Bible as literature, and my mom was like, why don't you want to take Bible as lit? I'm like, I want to take mythology again.
your sweet Christian mom. Trying her best.
I should have told her. My rebuttal should have been like, "But the Bible's not literature." Well, I guess literature isn't literature. Can be fiction or nonfiction.
I think anything with words and a front and back cover could probably be literature, right? True. I don't know what the definition is. I never thought about it.
I think even instruction manuals can be literature, honestly.
Yeah, somebody's like, "Hey, do you got any lit on this?" They're talking about like a brochure, you know.
Yeah,
true. So yeah, as a Bible that's there for sure.
So yeah, so I've always loved mythology, whether it was Greek mythology, which is like the entry way into mythology, or Norse, or Egyptian mythology, or some African mythology. Like, one of my favorite shows was American Gods. Great freaking show. At least the first season was great. It's like all the old gods. Well, every god is. And sometimes I feel like I risk sounding sacrilegious, and I have to reiterate that I'm a firm believer in Jesus Christ as my Lord. But in that show, all the gods are like real, but they get their power from prayers and offerings and things like that. And so, like, some are getting weaker and weaker, right? Because they're really, really old gods, like myths and stuff. And some of them are like jealous of Jesus. Jesus.
I'm not familiar with this show at all, I guess.
It's based off a comic book. I want to say it's written by Neil Gaiman, who created Sandman. And that has like a... Was it written by Neil Gaiman?
That guy has come up on this show like not horribly long ago.
American Gods. Who wrote? Anyway, but that has all these different gods and stuff. Who wrote it? Yes, written by Neil Gaiman. Of course, it was written by Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman also wrote, which also has a bunch of gods and stuff in it, and mythology, and made-up mythology that he did. He wrote Sandman. The Sandman universe involves, there's these entities called the Endless, and, they constructed the universe, entities of the universe, essentially. They all their names start with D. There is like Death. The main character is Dream. He's the god of the dream world. He controls dreams. He inspires people, stuff like that. Then there's Death, of course. There's Desire, who puts desires into people. There's Destiny, who knows everything. There's Destruction, who destroys. There's Despair. So-and-so. Anyway, Neil Gaiman is, heavy in mythology. I always love watching those shows like that or diving into inside mythology. So, this episode is, the start of Avatar mythology. That's why it's called Beginnings, in a sense. It also makes me... That's my biggest, one of the biggest reasons why I love this episode. Just the myth of it, the lore of it.
I, before we go too much further, I just wanted to say I found our ratings, and it's close to what I remember here, is you had 10s across the board. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had 10s across the board. Probably had...
Audio-visual. Chris, what do you think my audio-visual score was?
9.5?
8.5. I'm not quite as fond of the differing art style, and I feel like it's at a lower frame rate of animation, too.
They did it purposely. There's definitely some that it's absolutely is a lower frame rate. And you can tell.
I'm sure they had good reasons. I'm just not as fond of it. But 8.5, that's still good. All right. No shame. Narrative, Chris, I'll tell you, it was my lowest one.
You probably gave it a 7.5.
You nailed it. 7.5. And then the it factor, the X factor, what did I give it there?
Terrible. You would have had to give it at least, it's the beginnings. An 8.5?
8.55 was my total. I gave the X-Factor, I gave a 10, because I, too, Chris, right. And the reason for that is I, too, like a good mythos. I like a good origin story. I liked Greek mythology a lot. Probably, as a small child, Hercules, the Disney movie, was my favorite Disney movie. That stuck for a long time. Funny movie, for the record.
Great song.
Yeah.
Freaking great songs. Oh my gosh.
And the first time that I remember meta stuff, the first time I remember seeing the Scar rug on the ground, or when they're wearing Hercules' sneakers, the sandals and things, that kind of stuff. First time I remember seeing that and being that's funny. Anyway, yeah. I love good mythos, and I have to imagine that's where that 10 came from. Even though, as I noted, I probably have more issues with the narrative that maybe today, maybe after this, I won't have as much of. But
okay.
Anyway, Chris, I mean, from animation standpoint, because I think we can get through that quickly. Again, don't hate it. It's just not, I just don't like it as much as the standard animation. And I also don't necessarily love it when shows do that, when you got like a flashback episode that's got a weird vibe or a weird styling or something to it. It would be like if in Avatar, if we had a whole episode that was in that kind of grainier, yellowish flashback look that Zuko, right? It's kind of a different tint to it. Am I thinking of that right? Or am I?
Yeah. No, it is. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where that came from. But otherwise, as I rewatched it this time, I want to say at the very least that there is some fantastic art. There's fantastic spirits. I like the design of Wan. I like the design of the early bending. And the way they portrayed the early bending, that's all good. So, I don't know. I don't have a ton to say about it other than that I do like it. Just not as much.
Yeah, the art, it probably is one of those very, very subjective things. Like, one thing I commend them going with a whole nother art style. Like, that's freaking hard to do, especially for them who are perfectionists and stuff. And like the bending looks different, especially the fire bending looks different.
Yeah.
And I really like how that looks. The backgrounds I think are beautiful. Like, like there's that quick montage he does when he's like traveling the world. Like, the backgrounds are just so great. They look like he's going across canvases and stuff.
Like an oil painting on a canvas, kind of. And that might be, heck, that might be what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, that looks really great. When we're talking about animation, we can also get into character design. And I'll talk a little bit about some of, I know I'm trying to win you over, but I'll talk about a little bit of my few issues.
Well, you don't have to try to win me over, but yeah.
The spirits are purposely kind of weird and very Miyazaki-like. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, like, there's the carrot one, which is, I can take it or leave it, but it's kind of just funny. Like, what the heck is, I'm not a big fan of the design, nor the character himself, of the monkey.
The lemur, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Also, his voice is a little annoying. And I know it's on purpose, right? I know it's the role, but it's one of those, it's a little grating on the ears.
Yeah. I liked his design. My favorite line of his is like, "We are protectors of the forest." And like, he turns into his like dark spirit self. Like, I'm like, oh, he looks cool right there. And like, just the way he talks, and it's interesting to call him a protector of the forest, and like, he, like, just the dichotomy of like, saying, "We're the protectors of this forest," and he's like, "All right, I'm about to kill you to protect this forest." Like, what are you protecting?
He looks so not very spirity next to the other spirits, as well.
True.
But yeah, we do, true. there's other, like, just more kind of standard animal looking. Like the thing they catch in the net, it's like a mountain lion with little antelope horns. Like, it's kind of there's some.
Oh, I guess it is a mountain lion. I thought in my head it was just a, but you're absolutely right. It looks more like a mountain.
Yes.
I think they call it a cat deer. But okay. Yeah, it would probably more so a mountain lion, which is a cat, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big cat. Is it considered a big cat? Mountain lion? I think a mountain lion is.
Yep.
But, so that makes sense.
So there's a few like more standard looking animals. I assume that they're spirits because they're in the spirit wilds, but also it looks like an animal that you could just happen across in the not spirit wilds, which is fine.
Yeah. He does have a bit of a more tangential appeal than the rest of them, who seem like they're fluid as the wind and changing stuff.
Like, yeah, he feels more grounded in the physicalness of the spirit world, which is probably why he has like the stronger voice and the harsher outlook. Perhaps those things are probably tied together.
Yeah. One thing that I wanted to bring up that is relevant to really my loving of the episode is that, are the spirits in the wrong? Like,
I was thinking about the lion turtles and the way that the lion turtles dole it out. That's probably better for like the narrative, but I was kind of had a similar line of thought of like, why do lion turtles do what they do and how they decide to do
it? I think
Well, I mean, we can jump into narrative unless there's anything that sticks out at you specifically. I would say that my audio visual, I probably wouldn't change. I see where my thought process was. I don't think I'm going to change this. But if you don't have anything else, we can talk narrative.
Oh, thinking of the audio, though.
Oh, the audio though. Yeah.
I think the voice acting is great. We got Steven Yeun. Sorry if I mispronounced his name.
I still had to say it different every time.
I want to say Steven Yeun.
That's what my brain wants. Yuen, like Ewing without a G.
Actually, might just be Yoon. No, it's definitely not Yoon. Steven Yoon? Maybe Steven Yoon. Anyway, he does a great job as Avatar Wong.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to hear him play Zuko. Like, it's kind of too different. Yeah. I know he could do it.
I think you're going to have to step out of what you think about Zuko, and that's going to be hard because of the distinctness of his voice.
I know.
The voices of Rava and Vatu are great. Venus Williams is in there, right? In one voice.
She is.
Just for a line, but.
Yeah. It's funny. Years later, she was watching Korra, and she tweeted out, hey, Avatar fans, I'm not understanding where bending comes from. Does it come from the lion turtles, or does it come from the four elemental, animals and stuff? And so, it's an honest question that many people have.
No, but you and I have answered that question with science, Chris. We've already etched it.
But it's funny that she was in the episode. She probably just comes in and she just does, this little thing here. And then, she's busy being a freaking goat.
Yeah.
And, I really liked the voice for Vatu. Some of his line deliveries I thought were menacing and BA, there's a bunch of great lines in this. That was one of my call outs. When he's to hate me is to give me breath. To fight me is to give me strength. He's like, you will face oblivion, and it's just the beam and everything.
Even when he's trying to I keep wanting to say seduce, that ain't right. Convince Juan. He's trying to seduce Juan. He's trying to convince him. It's still a deep voice, and you know in your heart that that's a bad guy because of the deep voice and the dark colorations, and because our brains are conditioned to, in cartoons, see those and be like, that's bad. But it sounds soothing. It's easy on the ears. You're like, yeah, I kind of want to believe him.
Yeah. And also he says, she's been tormenting me for 10,000 years.
He sounds like he's in pain when he says it,
And Rob was like, get out of here, human.
Yeah, her reaction is, leave. She did not plead
and then she hits
her
him.
Case.
Rob was not a lawyer.
No. This is a great voice acting.
Some of the other cool lines... more from Vatu, just see you at the end of the world. That line is just a interesting line.
Yeah.
Cool line.
That's some apocalypse stuff right there. That's cool.
Yeah. And then of course I've mentioned this before of Juan. At the end of when he's about to face Vatu, and Vatu's like, what are you gonna do? And Juan is like, oh no, Vatu's like, you're just a mere human, and Juan is like, haven't you heard the legends? I'm no ordinary human anymore. Oh, there's legends of him. They didn't allude to that, but I assume people have been talking about the legend of Juan. But
do you get to say that about yourself? Is that one of
if
the...
If you're that cool, then yes. Haven't you heard the legends? That's a BA line to talk about yourself.
It makes me think of that Brian Regan joke where he's talking about if you're allowed to call yourself a hero and you have to say no. It's a good joke. But, that's a cool line.
And then, of course, one of my favorite lines that just hits me all the time is when Rava, when Juan dies at the end And Robin says, "We will be together for all your lifetimes, and we will never give up." That always hits me. I was like, the Avatar is like, just the Avatar is almost a universal fact of being that they will strive for goodness and peace in the world, no matter what the year is for eternity.
So I think I'm ready to jump into the narrative, Chris, if you are, the narrative portion. And
yes,
my thought process is I'd like to quickly, if you don't care, I'd like to quickly summarize some things that didn't really change for me, and then some things that did. Does that sound right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So one thing that did not change, a couple things that did not change for me is it's weird that we're kind of, this is like a real past. This isn't somebody telling a story as like a third person. She's talking to Juan. She's experiencing this memory. So some of the things that are like kind of nebulous to me feels like that's like third party translation instead of first. Still didn't care for that. I still didn't care for that Juan meddled, frankly. I know I'm hanging on to that, but like he meddled, he didn't even hear the other side of the story before he's like, yeah, let's break up this fight. It's like he didn't even, you know, I don't know, ask a little further question.
I mean, I understand that point because Rava, because one thing, Juan now has a bigger appreciation for spirits and animals. He's trying to save them. Like the spirits and animals come out like, oh, the great spirits are fighting, everybody run. And so like there is a urgency to the situation. And all he knows is one person says I'm being tormented, the other person kicks the crap out of me.
And that person's like, well, get out of here. And that's all he has to go on.
Get out of here, human. Just dismisses him.
But somebody says the great spirits, and you have the guts to just walk up and make a passing judgment. But he's young. But Chris, that brings me to, so that I'm going to come back to that in a second to a thing I do like. But some other things I don't love. I mentioned earlier, like, why the lion turtle is going to punish Juan for trying to, like, feed his family and, you know, combat injustice happening on the lion turtle's back. The lion turtle's like, no, I'll give you fire.
Why is the lion turtle cool with this government, this
caste
system that's on his back of his, that's on his back?
It wouldn't bother me if we haven't had such a precedent for treating these lion turtles with like the utmost respect, like the givers of bending and wisdom and ancient knowledge, you know what I mean? But it bothers me a little bit. So those are the three key
points.
In
the era before the Avatar, we've been not the elements, but we did have a class system that empowered certain people and made other people not powerful. Yeah. Okay, but forget that. Let me give you this bending. And Aang's like, wait, what? You guys had a class system?
I'm sorry, can you go back to the rich, the thing you just
for
said?
For the rich
before?
Stayed rich, and the poor had to scavenge. They had to go into the spirit wilds just for some food.
For some fruit. So, you know, that's a little annoying. But those, I'm going to call those pretty minor. But the things that I've come around on that I like better, and I think you'll elaborate on these even further. First and foremost, well, actually, they kind of all fall into this bucket of I love Juan's character arc across the span of the two episodes and how everything that he does sort of takes more and more steps towards being like an inherent part of the spirit world. And the best example I have is that he's trying to save that mountain lion and like three people die. Three humans die.
Oh yeah,
I was
saying that. I was saying that.
But he's trying to save the spirit. So he's already like he goes on this path of like, yeah, you can tell he's got a good heart, but you know, he's kind of a dumb kid and he makes some brash decisions, but you can tell he's got a good heart. And by the end of the story, that he's completely manifested in like giving his life to this greater cause. And it's a really nice arc that made me maybe much more fond of the whole experience than I used to be.
Yeah. I did write in my notes of like, one, were the spirits wrong? Two, those hunters weren't wrong. Like they were hunting deer, essentially.
With the powers given by the great lion turtles, you know?
And, they have to, it's not like those hunters are like, we're going to go kill whoever. They're like, hey, we have to go hunt. We need food.
Yeah, they weren't out there. It's like, that one's got the biggest antlers to hang on my wall. You know? No, it's just hungry.
They seem pretty legit.
They're going to give their bending back on their way back in. They're going to do it right.
And that monkey killed, two of them turned one into three of the four. Yeah, three of
them. Wait. It was like. No, I'm sorry. Did the half monkey win?
I think the half monkey one survives.
But half monkey now.
Now he's half monkey. It's I don't know what the story. I was, for some reason, on this rewatch of it, I am slightly more this part could have used a little, I don't know, just make them, make it more, because right now it's not, but the when worst, you say it's black and white, it's just.
Well, it's fine that it's gray. I would say the hardest issue with that is if you make the hunters worse people, that makes the lion turtles look even shittier. You know what I mean? Like the lanterns, go kill whatever you want. Just give it back on your way back into town.
Well, I think though you could get away with that. Like if you made the choose, have all the power or whatever, or make the hunters more evil. The lion turtle is still there for a reason. Like they're still there to protect humans from the spirits. Like that's their whole thing. Like after that, the lion turtles don't really care.
I didn't really interpret that. Like I see the logic in some of the things that they say, like even being banished to the spirit wild and stuff, but to protect yourself, like they allude to it directly, but what a weird role, I guess. Anyway, not negative, it just hits me funny.
Austin, they should have explained, and like I mentioned before, with the question of are the spirits in the wrong, like there were two worlds. There was the spirit world and there was the earth world. Vatu create toward that divide or something. He said it himself that he was one that broke that plane between the two, which I'm guessing that he made the spirit portals.
Reasonable guess.
Yeah. And so then spirits came into the world and was just like, we're just going to occupy this space and anyone who comes into the space. Like, they didn't really explain why did the spirits come into the world. I assume it's because it was to protect forests and natural life and animals and stuff like that.
Not just because it was there, we better go conquer this.
I don't think there was any conquering, but they found themselves in a land that wasn't. And again, I'm sure the context of that is like, hey, we're protecting the forest and stuff like that. But also, you're killing people. People have to survive on top of lion turtles to protect themselves from you. It's like, well, okay. So I wish they would have explained maybe a little more of that. Like, oh, well, why did spirits? I say that, but also, I think they were fine in not trying to explain too much because it's a two. Episode thing.
Yeah, I think they hit the right level of depth that I'm okay with, I think.
It's just,
It's easier to brush off. I am going to go back to, that stuff is a little easier to brush off if you're hearing a story, like an origin story from like a third party, where there's, I don't want to say an air of fiction, but there's like an air of telephone game to it. It's like, no, this is coming right from Juan, so it's a little harder to be like, well, why is that? And him just, you know, nothing. It's like, that guy was there.
But to your point, Juan was like, hey, I think I'm going to stay here, learn the way of the spirits and stuff. It gives the vibe that Juan is not self-reliant or self-indulgent, leaning on his own understanding that he wants to understand. I think he wants to understand everybody, people and spirits. And that's why he also says, like, oh, I want to go to other cities. He wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to stay in the spirit wild. I want to go see the other cities. And that is the thing about the Avatar, that but the Avatar is meant to go across the world and see how these different cultures, see different people and the way their lives and everything, which that creates empathy and understanding for them. That's something that Korra didn't have because she was locked up essentially away. Yeah, I think that did affect her in a certain way.
A nice allusion to the idea of being born and from this nation, but the dedication to empathizing with all of them.
Yeah, and then that goes in the conversation between Rava and Juan, where Rava's like, humans think only of themselves, like humans think that they are separate and stuff, but they've had to live that way. So I really like that his arc really is like the arc of every Avatar, even, you know, learning the four elements, which really, if you think about, like, learning the four elements isn't about learning the element itself. It's about learning a different culture and a different way of life, different way of thinking. Like, that is the essence,
right? You've now, it's not just the element, but it's like you've taken a part of that culture and that's you now. So it's identic, I guess.
Man, I wonder how the new show's gonna tackle that. Like,
And then, Chris, explain the part that I still, which this, I'm going to blame this, like, season two at large. I'm blaming more so than this episode. But was there always two portals? I still feel like I missed. Was there always two portals? Or did Vatu open a new portal at the end and they're right there next to each other? Like, can you clarify the spirit portal logic of that this episode presents?
I am under the assumption that Vatu made the two portals. Because I don't know why he has to make two of them, but I assume he made the two portals that bridge the divide between the two. And in the show, Korra opened up the southern one first, and then she opened the northern one. Yeah.
And so is there any logic behind, like, why two over...
No, but, okay, they don't ever
fair enough.
I think they could have easily had one, because why would you need two portals to get
Well, and they're right next to each other. Like, it's on screen. The animals walking away, like, the scale of the animals compared to the portals would suggest that they're, like, 50 yards apart.
Oh, the portals themselves probably... Well, and that's the interesting thing, is that the portals in the spirit world are probably 50 yards. Mm. Yeah, 50 to 100 yards. Probably a football field. But in the real world, you know, they're as far apart as can be.
I also was thinking about it, and I wouldn't say this is even a bad thing. I was just thinking about different ways to present it. And I kind of like... The one thing, and not the minor thing that I like, that's not fair. One of the minor things I like about the Roku book is when they describe, like, the spirit world and the physical world getting close enough, and there's, like, a little rift or, like, a tear almost in between it, more than a portal, like, something that feels a little more accidental. I think I might have liked more, but it's very minor. Anyway. And then, Chris, something that people talk about a lot, and I know I've brought it up before, but I've logicked myself around it, was at the end, you know, even though they contained Vatu, but at the end, they're still fighting evil, essentially, and talking about losing out to evil and fighting on forever. I decided what I'm going to logic that out as is that I'm going to blame Juan for that a little bit still, of like, just for separating them. And essentially, like, loosing a new evil into the world. And he contained Vatu, but he didn't contain all of the all of the consequences of Vatu's temporary freedom. And that's what spawned, like, the amount of evil there is in the world at that moment to try to continue fighting against and containing at any given moment. That's how I logic that in my head this go-round.
It's an interesting thought. because, well, one thing, we don't know who won the fight before. And so, like, all right, how does the world look? Because there's already, you know, this, there's already fighting, infighting amongst humans in the world.
Yeah, so maybe a caste system.
Yeah. And yeah, to your point, I think absolutely that since Juan didn't defeat Vatu, that hate and division and chaos didn't go away.
It's already sown out there.
But the interesting thing is that Korra defeated Vatu, and yeah, I'm sure that that stuff keeps going on. It's a, it's kind of a...
I'm gonna say the same thing though. It's the seeds of the evil have already been planted out there. So even if you get rid of Vatu, it's not like a, it's not like a vampire situation where it's like, well, you kill the main vampire that bit the first guy, and then all the vampires die. It's like, no, those other vampires are still out there having their own baby vampires.
Also, I think it's a relative thing of like, all right, if Vatu won, no, it's gonna be total freaking destruction. Like, it's not just not that, like, oh, people are evil. It's like, no, he's killing everybody. Like, that's, the world was wiped out. And if Rava wins, it's like, oh, it's not all hunky-dory living in heaven here. It's just like, hey, it's, things are better.
But what's Vatu's motive? Is he just power hungry? Is he like, I'm not going to kill everybody. I just want to use them for my own amusement. Or is he like, no, I want a clean slate. I'm going to kill them all.
I think it's their nature. I think both of them are, you know. Oh, one thing I did want to bring up, because I recently saw Fantastic Four, which is fine. 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
But in the movie, there is Galactus. Galactus eats planets. Like, that is his thing. He's not necessarily evil. He is just a universal truth that, and he just has this hunger that he has to consume planets, and that, and he comes to Earth, he wants to eat Earth, and like, and also if he doesn't do it, it's like the world is out of balance or something like that. And so he's not necessarily evil, that is just his nature, is to eat planets. And and Vatu, I think it's just his nature to be, to be chaos and darkness. Like, it's you know, it's similar to, I think, lots of things in mythology. Like, if you think about Ares, the god of war, like, what's this thing? It's like, he's just in, it's like, he is just war personified. He can't help it.
Just, he's a, not like a profiteer getting weapons, like, he didn't, arms dealing rich. He just does it because
it is, just in his nature.
So, like, you know what's funny, though, is when it comes to Greek mythology, or I suppose other types of mythology, Greek is what I'm most familiar with. So, like, Ares, I assume that when war is happening, that, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, if he had a little worship meter, when people are at war, more people are thinking about Ares. And so his little gamer score, his meow meow beans score goes up.
Have you seen the Wonder Woman animated movie?
I don't think so.
You haven't seen, watch that yet?
It's hard to say.
No. It's terrific. It's one of the best.
If you have it on Vudu, I probably have watched it. If it's not on
Vudu, I do have it on Vudu.
Then I probably have.
I do have it on Vudu.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like I've scrolled through, like, all your Vudu stuff at some point. I hope, don't ever buy any weird movies or anything, because I'll see them.
I'll just get a different account, and I've got it.
There's two profiles. There's one that's called Chris, and one that's called Definitely Not Chris's.
Definitely Not Chris. Don't look. sorry, I'm thinking of, the heck was I thinking about? Oh, beginning of Wonder Woman movie. It flashed back to, like, Ares is fighting Hippolyta, which is the mother of Wonder Woman. It's the Amazons versus, like, Ares' army or something. He's like, this war, like, it just empowers me. He's like, you can't do anything. Like, Like, every, even when my people die, like, it's an offering to me and stuff. And it's like, oh, that's kind of...
Because the gods of Greek mythology are, like, they're really petty and they have very human personalities, to me, it's just always like a popularity contest. Like, yeah, I got to try to get more people to be at war or to worship the ocean or to play pranks on each other.
Yeah. Greek mythology is freaking...
It's weird. Nuts. It's funny, but it's weird. It's too big of a tangent for another point, but I was playing Phoenix Immortals Rising, which is a pretty good game, especially on the Switch. And it's like $10. And it's Greek mythology. And then, first of all, it's pretty funny. Second of all, I couldn't help but think, I was like, this should just be Disney's Hercules, this open world 3D Greek mythology game, but just Disney's Hercules. Be amazing. Anyway, too big of a tangent. Chris, narratively speaking, any final points before I don't imagine you're going to change your score, but I'll offer up what my impact might be.
You know what? Narratively speaking, I think this, and it probably falls into narrative or all encompassing. I think these two episodes are the best episode. If you're going to watch one episode of Avatar, you want to get your Avatar fix in, you want to learn about the universe, this is the best episode to watch. It is, like, if you're like, oh, I want to get my Avatar fix in, but I want to watch a whole series, like, man, two episodes, it's like, get you everything you need.
That's tough, because you'd miss out on so much of the standard animation and what the Avatar was before, it was broken off, before Korra is broken off. That's tough. Which you really get? Anyway, Chris, I thought quite a bit about it. I think I'm going to bump my score, or I would, hypothetically, if we rescored. We don't. Everything we say is final. But yeah, I would bump it up to an 8.5 or a 9, one of those two. I hadn't landed on it yet, with the extreme positives, like the main reason for the change being of in just two episodes, they do, they cover a vast expanse of story, of mythos, and they have a really, really good, can't stress enough, a really good character arc that feels good and organic. It doesn't feel forced or like out of place. Like, no, they developed a great character in two episodes. I think that's great, but still with some of those qualms intact. So 8.5 or 9. Ballpark. Which with my other score at 10, I presume would bump my average. Well, I'll just put it and see what would it do if I did that. Oh, nope, wrong number. That would bump it up, yeah, like 0.6 points. So that's a pretty, it would bump it up to a 9.15.
Oh, wow, yeah,
which would easily make it. That was with a 9, if I said it was a 9. And that would make it the second highest scoring episode of the season, with the highest still being the last one, presumably because of the big fights.
Yeah, true. It's interesting. The one thing that in this conversation that I thought about might be narrative, just because I feel like I have more, not necessarily plot holes, just like,
eyebrow, I don't know all this stuff. Razors.
Raised eyebrow. But story, I love the story so much that even though before I gave it a 10 and now I'm adding more negatives to it, it still can't take it away from a 10. Even though I fully accept that there are some more things I'm like, I don't know about.
I mean, it could be this. I'm confused about this. Like when a cookie is perfectly delicious, even though it's not shaped as good as the other cookies, but tastes the same as the other cookies.
I don't know why people care about shapes of cookies.
I know, a cookie just needs, well, okay. I'm going to say the only time I care is I do like a cookie that holds its integrity when I pick it up. I don't want like a dangly little appendage vault, but other than that, it's like, oh, it could be weird and oblong and still be.
People, oh, do you want perfectly round cookies? Take a cylinder thing.
No, I don't. I don't want. You know what I'm going to do is take a spoon, like a normal person, do it that way.
Now some cookies and nice.
Or realistically, I'm going to break the square off of the square of squares from Walmart like I do.
Oh, other thing I want to mention, not related to it's not necessarily me changing my opinion or anything about score, but the final fight. So again, back to Fantastic Four, right? Galactus is huge. He's like the size of a skyscraper, essentially. And like seeing him for the first time was really cool. It was like, oh man, like because in the old Fantastic Four movies, in like the 2001 that Galactus was in, he was just this space cloud kind of deal. Like he was just a space cloud, but in the comics, he's just this giant person. And so he was a giant person in this one. Looks really cool and stuff. Like when he gets up, when you see him in relation to like the Statue of Liberty, and he looks at it, and like his head is almost the size of the Statue of Liberty. He looks really cool. But when they were fighting him, I was just like, this is kind of like just boring. It's just like ants fighting a human being, like just like pew, pew, pew. And it's like this isn't an interesting fight to me because he's so big that you're only fighting a part of him, right? And so I think about this fight of Juan versus Vatu is that Vatu is way bigger than him, but also he's just as fast, and like Juan is fighting to make him smaller. Like each freaking punch, each fire or each wind or element at him, it's like cutting away at Vatu and stuff. And also Vatu is like able to get his tendrils or stuff on Juan, and so that made the fight way more interesting than like a typical small being versus a giant being fight probably usually is.
I think that's a good note of putting the giant being on screen just for like the shock and awe factor. But I was like, okay, but does it feel good? In this case, it does. Yeah, absolutely. And that also it plays into the shifting sizes of Rava and Vatu throughout the episode, which is just a fun, a fun detail. And this it plays perfectly into that as well.
Yep.
Chris, what else? Anything final thoughts?
Little other minor thing. His friend, I like that his friend took the wrong idea from what Juan did, because that is his best life.
That's how that goes.
It's like Juan showed us, and Juan was like, "I didn't show you shit." Juan showed us we could do it. Juan was like, whoa, don't pin that on me. Hey, monkey, I ain't with this guy. I'm not trying to... He's talking about killing every spirit he sees. We're just killing the dark ones.
That was a great scene, and the way you said that made me want, like, Chris Rock to play the role for just a minute. Just for that one... I didn't say shit! Something like that. Then the rest, it's still just Steven Yeun or Ewan.
All I did was get the fire and got the F out of there. They banished me. They banished the brother. Can you believe that? They banished me. Banished me.
Mama!
I was out in the spirit wilds. Didn't have no toilet paper. Can you believe that? Got me out here pooping in these woods. Frogs come out. That's how, now I was getting more Charlie Murphy.
I'd watch it. Hey, man. I'd watch the whole thing.
I mean, now when I'm going to rewatch, they should, Charlie Murphy's such a great storyteller.
Well, that being said, I'm glad we walked back through this episode, and with time in between now and the last time I watched it, I think it's great to do that. Also, like doing these revisiting episodes, I feel like it is kind of insightful, but. I think that's enough for tonight, or for night right now. At least I say tonight. We got one more we're going to do, but tonight for right now, I mean. And yeah, thanks for being here, buddy. My name's Sean. That's Chris, aka the Objective Geek.
I'm Chris Rock.
He's Chris. That is Chris Rock. That wasn't your best work, but I got the impression, pun intended. this is Avatar: The Last Podcaster talking about beginnings and revisiting it. And thanks for being here. I'll leave all the stuff down in the description. If you want to comment, like, bell, thumbs up, positive reviews, sub, whatever. We like all those positive things that make us feel good about ourselves. And that makes me happy. So do that. And thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.